Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The world is full of a number of things I know we should all be as knowledgeable as, but are we? No, definitely no, positively no, decidedly no. Green people have reusable faces, and red people have angry faces. Blue people have sad faces, and some people have no faces at all. And in the words of the immortal cancelled creative Ferdinand Joseph Lamont, as he begged to have more than just his influence allowed in Hollywood,
on the screen and the stage, musicals give us our story gauge. You want to be in the No Little One? Well, Chris and Kevin bring you plenty of fun. We'll go down rabbit holes, filling hearts with ideas for your soul. And fa-la-la-la-la, and then we talk musicals. And fa-la-la-la-la, and then we talk history. We hope our little podcast frees you from misery. Talking about musicals and history.
Welcome, folks, to another edition, and this will be our final episode of the season for Talking Musical History, and this is Kevin, and
I'm Chris,
and welcome to Talking Musical History.
It's always a pleasure to have you guys all join with us to learn more about musicals and history throughout time.
In this time, we are looking at Singing in the Rain.
Just singing in the rain. This is the culmination of realizing how the sound industry sort of built up, which is really what Singing in the Rain is about, right? That transition going from
silent pictures
to talkie pictures, right? Yeah, yeah. I think how first this has inspired us to take a look at like 42nd Street
and the Jazz Singers
and the Jazz Singer and all these other films, right?
Yeah, I had never seen the Jazz Singer.
I had never actually seen it completely.
Ever.
Wow.
And yeah. I had never seen 42nd Street.
Yeah, I'd never actually seen the full 42nd Street either. Yep.
So this gave us an opportunity to kind of delve back into some of the older movies. And I'm glad we had a chance to explore with you folks the pre-Singing in the Rain.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like films that inspired that movie musical that we all love. Gene Kelly, obviously, the amazing star behind that, that sort of like pushed it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about the origin of Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, definitely. And all the cool things connected to that.
Made directly for the film, but no intention for a stage adaptation at that time. Wait 30 years again, folks, for that. And taken as a collection of songs from various, so kind of like your first jukebox movie musical. Produced with lyrics combined from Arthur Freed, born Grossman, and yes, he was Jewish. Worked uncredited on The Wizard of Oz and sang with the Marx Brothers.
Oh, really? Sang with the Marx Brothers? That's pretty cool. If you guys ever get a chance to like watch a Marx Brothers film, I would strongly suggest it. They have a very clever and interesting ways of looking at reality.
And he also helped bring up the director of this picture, Vincent Minnelli, who also worked and fell in love with Judy. So that's how we get Liza.
That's fun.
Also helped the careers of Betty Comden, born Basia Cohen, as an actress, librettist, lyricist, and screenwriter who teamed up with Adolph Green, as their writing partnership has been called the longest-running creative partnership in the theater history.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
In addition to this, there was On the Town, 1944.
Oh, wow.
Million Dollar Baby, 1945. Wonderful Town. Peter Pan, 1954. Anti-Mame, and so much more. Comden and Green received the Kennedy Center Honors in 1991. Another person who Freed helped was that of composer-songwriter. Nacio Herb Brown was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1970. All of the songs from the movie were taken from other works. So, Singing in the Rain from Hollywood Review, 1929. Fit as a Fiddle and Ready for Love from College Coach, 1933. All I Do is Dream of You from Sadie McKee, 1934. Make 'em Laugh, originally titled Be a Clown in The Pirate by Cole Porter.
Not Make 'em Laugh. Make 'em Laugh was not written by Cole Porter.
Right. But Be a Clown was.
Did you borrow someone's song?
You know, I mean,
you know, we have no problems with borrowing people's songs. We borrow people's songs all the time for our show.
As you can see.
As you can see. Donald O'Connor needed a solo number, right? Like Make 'em Laugh, right? So they wanted to have a special solo number. And so they kind of did steal it from Cole Porter.
Was performed originally by Judy Garland. And how Judy Garland got her name was actually by George Jessel, who we talked about in The Jazz Singer, who would have been the jazz singer before Al Jolson.
The only two songs written for the movie, Moses Opposes, right, was written by Roger Edens and Betty Camden, and Adolph Green. Make 'em Laugh was written by Arthur Freed and Nacio Herb, which you said, especially for Donald O'Connor.
But The Wedding of Painted Doll was from Broadway Melody, 1929. Should I from Lord Byron of Broadway, 1930. Beautiful Girl from Stage Mother, 1933. And Going to Hollywood, 1933 as well. You Were Meant for Me, not the Jewel song, obviously. From Broadway Melody, 1929. And also the Hollywood Review of 1929. Good Morning, actually, from Babes in Arms, 1939. Would You from San Francisco, 1936. Broadway Rhythm from Broadway Melody, 1936. And Babes in Arms as well. Broadway Melody, obviously, from the same name in 1929. Finally, You Are My Lucky Star from Broadway Melody of 1936.
Yeah, it seems like the best formula for making a musical is basically to borrow songs from other things, yeah, and then incorporate them in your dig. I mean, like I remember doing the musical Crazy for You at the University of Miami, and you know, it works. It works. If you have good pieces and you like put the story together to make it fun, it can work.
Yeah. Surprisingly, this great film was shot for a cost of $2.5 million, was basically ignored by film critics when it was released and treated with indifference. It received only two Academy Award nominations, Best Supporting Actress, Jean Hagen, and Best Musical Score, Lenny Hayton, and didn't win any. The film's original score Oscar nomination lost to Alfred Newman's score for With a Song in My Heart that I've never heard of. That is what won the Oscar for that year instead of Singing in the Rain.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying that the 1952
yes,
film...
Yes, what we just started to watch.
With a song... Wow. That's so interesting. Because, you think about, the longevity of both of those films.
With a Song in My Heart. We watched a few minutes of it.
And we heard that lovely rendition by Ella Fitzgerald. If you have Apple Music or Spotify, I would definitely check out With a Song in My Heart by Ella Fitzgerald. But you know, I don't know. The movie is on YouTube. If you want to see with a song in my heart, the Jane Froman story, it's there. It's a musical.
It's a thing. It was done.
Yeah, yeah.
And it won best.
So how bad could it be?
Yeah.
How bad could it be? It beat out
Singing in the Rain. Rain. In 1952.
You know, once again, I think about, like, Do the Right Thing versus Driving Miss Daisy. I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes there's, like, some other thing that they're trying to say.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know what it
and
is.
And sometimes Hollywood does the safe thing. Lena Lamont's character was based mostly off of John Gilbert, a silent film star, whose voice did not match the image MGM looked for. And, interesting fact, was left at the altar by Greta Garbo. He started drinking himself to death, and there is a movie where he's portrayed by Barry Bostwick. Grauman's Chinese Theater was founded in 1927 when Sid Grauman opens a second theater. Gene Kelly, after performing the iconic Singing in the Rain scene, was soaked through his wool suit and running a high 103-degree fever.
Yeah, he. So a lot of people think that they used milk in the rain. They didn't do that, but he had to film a lot. He got sick. He still performed. People actually say that Moses Supposes was the hardest scene, but I wonder if Gene actually thinks that Singing in the Rain probably in his head. He allegedly was difficult to work with.
Yeah.
That being said, people still chose to work with him, so he must have been doing something right.
Due to the frustration with Debbie Reynolds actually being not as much of a seasoned, quote-unquote...
Well, she was a gymnast.
Actor and dancer.
She was a trained gymnast. Yeah. So she did have a lot of abilities because, you know, you have to do performative, like, movements, especially for the floor work. So, like, you know, it makes sense to me that she would be able to, like, you know, achieve some of those things. And she has a really cool story about, like, around her that we'll get to a little bit later as well.
And due to for the frustration of that, Gene Kelly took out his frustration on Donald O'Connor during filming.
Yeah, well, she was just a teenager, and he kind of felt bad. And honestly, like, you know, when we delve deeper into Gene's sort of history, I think he knows that he's too hard on teenaged women in the dance realm.
Yeah.
It seems to be a consistent thing that happens.
Which is why he had his friend and legend, Fred Astaire, come in to help work with Debbie Reynolds. And it was reported that she worked so hard her feet were bleeding.
Yes, that is the truth. She said that, like, there's nothing sort of harder. There's two things harder in life, and that's, like, Singing in the Rain, like, childbirth. So the birth of Princess Leia was as difficult as the birth of Singing in the Rain for Debbie Reynolds.
The force was strong with her.
Those of you that don't know, Carrie Fisher, who played Princess Leia in the Star Wars films, is Debbie Reynolds' daughter.
Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
And there's a movie that is about their life that is brilliant called Postcards from the Edge.
I would have called it a Fisher tale. But Debbie wouldn't have liked that. She would have had to be first billing. Ooh, Debbie's Little Fisher.
In the opening montage, as Gene Kelly's character is explaining the origin story of him.
Right.
And Donald O'Connor, they're...
That we compared to kind of Ginger Rogers in her life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They start to entertain in the industry, flashback, pool room, sneaking into theaters. And there's a reference, The Dangers of Drusilla is a King Kong ripoff.
Was it a tall woman? Oh, I see. I forgot about that. Yeah, because it's a picture of a tall woman, like, sort of going through the forest, and she's like, yeah, that's clever, I guess. No, it is. It's
yeah, fun. And then they made up the star that was also referenced in there, Esma Gray, who's no one that I could find throughout history.
I mean, sometimes they just, like, throw in a name, like, from the Make It Laugh song, the what's his name?
Samuel J. Snodgrass.
Yes, Samuel J. Snodgrass.
it's really kind of funny because, like, you know, you would think that they would, like, come up with some sort of, like, funny connection thing that might be, like, really, like, oh, people would look it up. But it was just, you know, whatever.
What, it's a made-up name.
It's a made-up name. But it's funny sounding, which is important.
R.F. Simpson is just a completely made-up name. Sounds like a fake made-up executive. And the other ones that were made up were Death Rides the Prairie.
That actually sounds like it would be a fun...
Western
horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Death with a scythe
on a horse. Yeah. On a skeleton horse, too.
Yeah! Mm-hmm. And like the village people like close the doors and everything, like when like he rides in, mm-hmm. Death is coming.
To several different places like Dead Man's Fang, Arizona, Oatmeal, Nebraska, Coyote, New Mexico.
I thank goodness for fake places because it allows us to talk about a reality that we're not wholly ready to understand.
Monumental Pictures, combination of Paramount, founded in 1912, and Universal, it was founded in the same year. A few months, like one was, Paramount was founded in May 8th, and Universal founded April 30th.
I'm thinking that since Singing in the Rain starts at 1927, right? That's when we started. Because of all of the reshoots and sort of the reconfiguring of the film to make it a good project, probably didn't get it out until like everyone was pretty much doing talkies already. I would assume it would be a 2-year process.
The Royal Rascal was patterned after the Three Musketeers, specifically the film in 1948 with Gene Kelly. The jazz singer is referenced in the film right before Ethel Barrymore is referenced as Gene Kelly recognizes Debbie Reynolds. And that leads us to a little detour that we made in our reference about people jumping out of cakes.
So yeah, we looked up because like you know you think to yourself like what how easy is it to get like do people still jump out of cakes?
Yes. So I researched it with a service from Scarlet Entertainment out of Las Vegas.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. It sounds like it is, but it's not that bad.
No, the woman was very nice. There's not very many of these in the country still. So there's that one in Las Vegas, and there's probably one in LA, I would think. It's a wooden cake. Someone pops out, and they start at around... So this is an entertainer. They are usually the backgrounds of dancers, models, or singers. And starting out at $3,500.
Wow. That's some money.
For just the cake. And then to set up would add an additional $350 for delivery. Pop-up person would be an additional $1,500 for a B or C list person.
Oh, wow. That's not bad.
It would be $75,000 to around $100,000.
So I could get Rob Schneider to jump out of a cake?
If he agrees to it, sure.
I think that would be funny.
Yeah, and however, the woman was very clear with me, the dancers would not dance. And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, okay. So they just literally, their job
about,
is to pop out
about
of
dancing, or is she talking about dancing?
I believe any kind of choreographed material.
Oh, so not even like all I do the whole night do is think of you.
I no.
So that wouldn't even be possible.
Correct.
Oh, come on, that's the whole point. My life's goal to like live all of the movie musical realities is just now dashed. And what was that name of the business again?
Scarlet Entertainment.
If you're interested in like having cake popping out fun in the Vegas area?
In the Las Vegas, yeah.
Then, you know, live that life and go visit their website. One thing that like strikes me about Singing in the Rain is the sort of like loss of voice that happens in it, right? You have this very like
talented actress, singer, dancer that's sort of represented by Kathy Seldon, super interested in like approaching a really successful and also awesome career. And then she has Lena Lamont basically like being a gatekeeper for her own career. She doesn't care about Don Lockwood, and yet she's getting in the way. She doesn't care about Kathy Seldon, but she's getting in her way. Like, Lena Lamont basically steals Kathy's voice and uses it to get more rich and powerful. I was thinking it'd be really interesting instead. Like, if I were to do Singing in the Rain, like, yeah. I think it would be really interesting to have Kathy Seldon played by a African-American person.
Yeah.
Specifically because, like, more of a sort of a thing, like, when, like, Don Lockwood, like, crashes into the car and, like, you know, the cop is like, hey, that's a really famous guy, Don Lockwood. Do you, like, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, that I feel like that would still hold true. Like the a black woman's voice taken by this white woman, I think that's would be an interesting choice too, and be a lot of fun.
I mean, because that's what happened throughout history, anyways.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then it like sort of like creates a little bit more of a like Don Lockwood is like, I don't care about Lena Lamont, but she's like I am told that I should gravitate towards her instead of towards Kathy. And now, to honor our titular name of today's podcast, the Talking Musical History Podcast players bring you...
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
A man who refuses to wear a mask as he goes to his first Broadway show since before the pandemic. The rules of the game are simple. We must respond to each other with song titles or melody-inspired responses from our recent triptych, The Jazz Singer, 42nd Street, or Singing in the Rain. Kevin will play the defiant patron who refuses to wear a mask. And I will play the humble box office manager. Good morning, good morning. Wanna see a Broadway show?
Hello again, hello. I'd like to see a show.
To hear the beat of dancing feet, you have to wear a mask to see the elite 42nd Street.
But I'm fit as a fiddle, who needs a face glove? I can jump over the rules set above.
I've got a feeling you're fooling. I've got a feeling it's make-believe.
Every time I wear a mask, I'm shamed by our America.
Well, Moses opposes it's COVID. It's not morbid, but Moses opposes erroneously.
I'm amazed and confused. I've been dazed.
Shuffle off to Buffa. Shuffle off to Buffa. Shuffle off to Buffalo.
I've got some money. My bribe's turned sunny.
Oh, baby, what I couldn't do with plenty of money from you. In spite of the worry that no masks bring, just a little filthy lucre buys a lot of things.
You are my lucky star. You've opened a Broadway's portals here on Earth for this poor mortal. You are my lucky star.
Great job, Kevin.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. I've been doing improv since I was 5 years old.
Lies.
Well, that certainly fits the title of our program, Singing in the Rain. Whose voice is it anyway? So, like with some other things we talked about, waiting 30 years can sometimes be magic.
It's a kind of magic.
Singing in the Rain. It opened in 1983 at London Palladium and ran for a little over 2 years.
Oh, that's okay.
And yeah. It's put on in different places, and I've watched a production of it online on YouTube. It was okay. The rain on the stage. The stage downpour is so noisy and poses a threat and poses such a danger of a microphone short circuited. So the rain is kind of tough to do on stage.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes. I did a show, The Grapes of Wrath, at the University of Miami Jerry Herman Ring Theater, and we had to like have you have to have like a receiving sort of pool to like collect the water, and then you have to have like basically, you know, like a system of like sort of canals or whatnot, so the water can go somewhere, because you know, water plus electric, so it's generally bad.
Not a good idea,
right? Yeah. So it's really important for you to like have a really good system in order for it to work, and that's why you don't see too many things like that. But I mean, like with modern technology, you can do all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, the musical did win a Laurence Olivier Award.
That's very cool.
In 2001, for Best Musical Revival.
After this message, we'll be right back.
A lot of cool things happened in 1952, other than, you know, Singing in the Rain. Queen Elizabeth II is proclaimed Queen of the United Kingdom. It's Coronation Day. The United States entered in a peace treaty with Japan.
Alan Turing, the man who invented the computer, folks, pled guilty for gross indecency, because this was pre Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even. This was like, oh, you're queer? We will fix you.
Oh, no.
And then he ended up dying. It's in the movie The Imitation Game. Anne Frank's diary was also translated into English.
The U.S. Supreme Court limits the power for the president to seize private businesses after President Harry Truman nationalizes all the steel mills. Because of a strike.
Puerto Rico becomes a self-governing Commonwealth of the U.S. the day before First Lady Eva Perón dies of cancer at age 33. The first successful sex reassignment surgery, or gender confirmation surgery,
Woot!
Performed in Copenhagen, giving birth to Christine Jorgensen.
That's awesome.
As our transgender trailblazer.
Agatha Christie's murder mystery play, The Mousetrap, opens at the Ambassador's Theatre in London. President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower fulfilled his campaign promise, and he traveled to Korea to find out what could be done about the conflict. So this is when America starts getting involved more with that. So, you know, the 1952 was a crazy time.
Yeah, crazy enough to bring some crazy voice actor like Billy West the earth.
One of the craziest, awesome voice actors.
And famed director Robert Zemeckis.
Oh, wow. Robert Zemeckis.
And Superman himself, Christopher Reeve.
I find it interesting, like trying to think of the world of the film and what it exists in. Time of the film realm that it is in.
The movie is set in 1927.
This is like right before the stock market crashes.
Mm-hmm, right? 1929, yeah.
Right, exactly. And there's like a bit of anxiety going on. I'm not sure what the reluctance was to push to sound, because they like, you know, they say that sound helped save the film industry. Don't want to see films because they want to tighten their budgets, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, look at all these cool things that are happening now. Can't really tighten our budgets. Maybe we have to do other things. Cosmo says, you know, yeah, that's what they said about the horseless carriage in reference to, like, you know, hey, you know, the car is here to stay. It's going to happen with talking pictures as well.
Well, it's the one guy in blackface that doubts it.
So producers of silent films, which were currently in production or which had recently been completed but not released, hastened to add or retrofit silent
dialogue sequences so their films could be advertised as talking pictures, right? So they're like legitimately like what happened in Singing in the Rain did happen in Hollywood to an extent. Donald O'Connor, he was smoking 4 packs a day during the show. I guess they didn't check the aperture for the camera, and they had an overexposed, it happened, and like he really hurt his body because of the cement floor. He comes back and they're all like applauding him, and then they're like, you know, hey,
do it again,
and that sucks. But he did it, yeah. Right? And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm sure he died with crippling arthritis.
The pain. I don't know why they didn't put mats down and made it look like concrete so he could do it easier. There's no tap in the song, is there? He doesn't really like tap dance and make him laugh. He's on that hard cement surface. What were you saying when we were watching it? You said that...
I was feeling like I was getting arthritis just watching it.
Yeah, 100%. And like He talks about how, you know, he got carpet burn from like doing the spin on the carpet and all that, and he talks about how like the hard cement dancing on that like really like hurt his joints and all that, and like, you know, it must have been really hard for him to like go back and like re-engage with that experience. Yeah. But like you know, a true professional does it anyway.
You must. The show must go on.
Dignity.
He was doing all that, and he was like, you know, trying to scale walls and make him laugh, and like, you know, dancing on cement. Like, you know, he definitely put his body through a lot of scrapes, bruises, carpet burns,
and being mistaken for Danny Kaye.
That was our bad for Hans Christian Andersen. Definitely, they kind of look alike.
They really, they do look alike.
I know they're not.
Like,
however,
when you Google or like when you look up in YouTube, Danny Kaye.
Sometimes other people make the mistake too, so I don't feel
right.
Like
we are not the only person to confuse.
We're not the only people. Yeah.
Donald O'Connor with Danny Kaye. They are two very different people.
Very different people. That we mentioned the Hays Code before. There was a major violation, code violation. Yeah, there's a major violation that they actually had to cut in the film. It was a steamy vamp dance, right? Segment of the Broadway Melody Ballet with Sid Charisse and Gene Kelly. And the reviewers from both the production code and the Catholic Church Legion of Decency objected to a brief suggestive pose or moment between the dancers. Also, Gene Kelly choreographed his dance scene with Sid Charisse to hide the fact that she was taller than he was. So that's why they do all that leaning stuff in the dance.
And on the steps, too.
Right? That's so silly. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, like, it still looks good. It doesn't look like he's doing it for that reason. Do you think that?
No.
So that's positive. He made it work.
What didn't work was Gene Kelly being in Guys and Dolls, though.
Yeah, he totally should have been in Guys and Dolls, right? So we were like sort of, you know, splunking down our rabbit holes like we tend to do. And we found that it, like, Gene Kelly really, really, really wanted to be in Guys and Dolls. Sky Masterson, Gene Kelly against Frank Sinatra as
Nathan Detroit.
Yeah, it's a brilliant choice, mm-hmm. Right?
Much better than Brando.
I mean, you know, Brando tried.
He gave it his effort.
He did. He is an actor. And actually, people said he was like even more unbearable because he couldn't get out of his contract so he could begin working on Guys and Dolls, which he so desperately wanted to and knew that he was perfect for. I did want to point out that Beautiful Girls does not mention redheads or people of color in the song. And she's only sweet 16. Oh man, sounds kind of
creepy old guy.
In Singing Rain, they do a really good job of explaining the motion picture dubbing sequence of events in motion picture filmmaking. Like, they legitimately at times were like, yeah, I don't really like this actor's or actress's voice. I really would rather have this kind of style of voice.
Yeah.
And they really.
Like James Earl Jones and Darth Vader.
Exactly. And a lot of times it just comes down to like, oh, this voice has more gravitas, this voice sounds more classical, whatever the thing is. almost all movie musicals are done to are done through what is called playback. Exceptions would be Tom Hooper's Les Miserables, you know, where they like are forcing them to
sing live,
which I get the interest in that. You can find like a whole bunch of really cool videos about like voice dubs, lost vocals on YouTube. It's a great resource for that if you're interested. So the show's process of playback and dubbing for the song Would You, right, goes through a bunch of different steps, right? The step one process, pre-recording. Step two, practice and record. Step three, playback on set. Step four, the final mix. So in the pre-recording step, they, you know, sit down and they're singing with Debbie Reynolds' character, Would You, Would You? And then they go and go with Lena Lamont, right? And she's practicing how it sounds. So she's going to recreate the facial movements in order to make it look like she's the one singing. Goes to the next step, which is playback on set. And they're on set doing the actual recording of the thing where you're lip syncing and making it all work and come together. Reset up the mix, make that sound sweet and cool, mix those two things together, and then you have movie magic. Like, since Méliès, movies are about magic. The ones that do really well, the ones that compel people and excite people, they're magical. So they can't just be like, you know, they have to be special and cool.
And part of the special and cool part of this world is the chemistry with the cast. So Gene Kelly is obviously Don Lockwood, and he just came off of An American in Paris.
So Gene Kelly, or Eugene Caron Kelly, who, like, you know, plays Don Lockwood, born on August 23rd, 1912 in Pittsburgh. You know, he actually was enrolled by force in dance classes at the age of 8. Actually, he wanted to play baseball for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So Gene Kelly's family opened a dance studio in Squirrel Hill neighborhood of Pittsburgh in 1932 that was later renamed the Gene Kelly Studio of Dance. And he would teach there while attending school. He graduated from the University of Pittsburgh, go Panthers, in 1933 with a bachelor's in economics. Kelly was admitted to the University of Pittsburgh Law School, but Kelly's gotta dance. So Gene dropped out of law school after 2 months to continue his life's work. Dance.
Gotta dance.
Legal school dropout. Tired of hitting the books. Go back to dancing. The ladies will give you nice looks. You once said you were disenchanted. Your girl dropout rate was very high. They probably left because you're that kind of guy.
And of course, Gene was a perfectionist. But even O'Connor said about working on Singing in the Rain that for the first several weeks, he was terrified of making a mistake and being yelled at by Gene. It was no wonder he could not keep a female student past 16. Val Johnson, who also appeared with Kelly in Pal Joey at the Ethel Barrymore Theater in 1940, recalled, "I watched him rehearsing, and it seemed to me that there was no possible room for improvement, and yet he wasn't satisfied. It was midnight, and he had been rehearsing since 8 in the morning. I was making my way sleepily down the long flight of stairs when I heard staccato steps coming from the stage. I could see a lamp burning. Under it, a figure was dancing. It was Gene." He's a workhorse, and he's a perfectionist, and he, like, builds amazing art. And his first actual big breakthrough, Roger and Hart's Pal Joey.
Gene Kelly came to Hollywood in 1942, and he was just at the right place at the right time.
He later stated that he was angry that MGM had repeatedly prevented him from accepting lead roles in other films, such as Guys and Dolls, 1955. Kelly's extremely hostile attitude throughout the filming of Singing in the Rain, 1952, resulted in MGM's finally releasing him from his contract.
And that leads us to the leading lady, Debbie Reynolds. Kathy Seldon.
Oh, yeah. And Debbie Reynolds is an amazing woman, and not just because she gave birth to Princess Leia, and not just because she gave birth to the American horror scream queen, Billie Lourd. right? So she is the mother of Carrie Fisher, right? 1950, born in 1956, right? Princess Leia. And she's also the grandmother of Billy Lord from American Horror Story and the Scream Queen series. I think she does a really good job. Like, A, trying to keep up with all of them, and B, just like really really just like showing off like how she can keep up on the, how she can just perform on the same level as Donald and Gene.
Yeah, and Debbie Reynolds is just amazing. I loved pretty much every movie I've seen her in, including like in her later years when she was in Mother. She played the mother too in and Out with Kevin Kline, and I just that was just brilliant acting on her part too.
That's fun. Also, like In and Out. I love that film. We mentioned that Debbie was a gymnast, and if you guys really want to see her like do some tumbling, I showed this to Kevin. You thought it was cute.
I thought it was very cute.
Yeah, and it would be the only time you would ever see like football done in a style that looks like a musical.
Musical, yeah.
Yeah, and if you're interested in that, please visit it on YouTube. But the musical from 1953, I Love Melvin, with Donald O'Connor. Yeah. So one team looks oddly like the University of Michigan, and another team looks oddly like
Ohio State.
And we mentioned Debbie was 19, and she actually lived a distance away with her parents, so she had to commute to be a part of the show. So she would wake up at 4 a.m. and ride three different buses to go to the studio.
Dedication.
Sometimes to avoid the commute, she would just like sleep at the set. I do have to give kudos to Kelly because he did express remorse about the behavior that he had with Debbie, and he said basically, I wasn't nice to Debbie. It's a wonder that she still speaks to me.
So Donald O'Connor was Cosmo Brown. Donald O'Connor was also in what Chris mentioned earlier, I Love Melvin, also with Debbie Reynolds. At the same time, it looks like he was also in Irving Berlin's Call Me Madam with Ethel Merman and Vera Ellen, along with George Sanders. And before that, he was in Are You With It?
Oh, was he with it?
In 1948, he was definitely with it as Milton Haskin.
Just like Gene, he gotta dance.
Gene Hagen as Lena Lamont, fresh from her role in The Asphalt Jungle. And one of the people who are not credited, but I like to bring up, is Madge Blake as Dora Bailey, a Hollywood gossip columnist based on Luella Parsons. For those of you who used to watch the old Batman series with Burt Ward and Adam West, you may remember her as Aunt Harriet. And talks about, in terms of dubbing, Betty Noyes was the singing voice of Debbie Reynolds on the song Would You? And You Are My Lucky Star.
They had Debbie dubbing someone that was dubbed by someone else. Debbie's character as Kathy is dubbing for Lena Lamont, right? But in the actual movie, the Singing Cavalier, Lena Lamont's character is actually doing the voice for Debbie, doing the voice dub for her.
Like Inception.
Vocal Inception.
And in Singing in the Rain is a very young Rita Moreno, who is Zelda Zanders in her fourth movie appearance. So now we have some references. So there was Shaw, George Bernard Shaw, Irish playwright, critic, political activist of most work, famous for Pygmalion, equals My Fair Lady. Leading dramatist of his generation, and in 1925 was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. In 1938, he provided the screenplay for the filmed version of Pygmalion, for which he received an Academy Award. Shaw's expressed views were often contentious. He promoted eugenics and alphabet reform, and opposed vaccination and organized religion. So it was kind of all over the place. Molière, whose real name is Jean-Baptiste Poquin, a French playwright, actor, and poet, widely regarded as one of the greatest writers in the French language and world literature, combining commedia dell'arte elements with more refined French comedy to come up with comedies, farces, tragic comedies, comedy ballets, and more. Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, the Bard of Stratford and Avon.
I think they know about the Shakespeare because they know about the Romeo and Juliet.
Ibsen, Henrik Johan Ibsen, Norwegian playwright and theater director, as one of the founding members of modernism in theater. Ibsen is often referred to as the father of realism and one of the most influential playwrights of his time to mid to late 19th century. Some notable works include A Doll's House, Hedda Gabler, Ghosts, When We Dead Awaken, and The Master Builder. He influenced other playwrights and novelists such as George Bernard Shaw, Oscar Wilde, Arthur Miller, James Joyce, and Eugene O'Neill. Gettysburg Address, written by Abraham Lincoln, November 19th, 1863, 47 years ago. Ethel Barrymore, second child of actors Maurice Barrymore, whose real name is Herbert Blythe, and Georgiana Drew. Her acting career spanned 6 decades and was regarded as the first lady of the American theater. She was the sister of actors John and Lionel Barrymore, the aunt of actor John Drew Barrymore, and the great aunt of Drew Barrymore. Ridi is laugh in Italian. Pagliacci is clown in Italian, name of an opera in 1892. And Monkey Shines. When I first heard this term, I thought of completely wrong, but my brain is weird. Actual monkeys shining shoes.
I know, you're thinking about like literal like Simpsons monkeys.
Yes.
Like the monkey from The Simpsons, like, you know, that I know what you're talking about. I see what I understand where your brain went.
Like the monkey that wrote the Best of Times, the Blurst of Times gets fired from writing and gets put into shoe shine business. That's what I think of. It means acting up, but has racist roots.
Right.
It first appeared in 1828 in the minstrel song Jump Jim Crow. I cut so many monkey shines, I dance da galopade. Rin Tin Tin, rescued from a World War I battlefield by an American soldier, Lee Duncan, who nicknamed him Rinty. Duncan trained Rin Tin Tin and obtained silent film work, then went on to appear in 27 Hollywood films, gaining worldwide fame. And then we have a review from Bosley Crowther, March 28th, 1952, in the New York Times. Under the protocol of Hollywood, this is less majesty. However, the pattern of the picture is such that a lot of room is made for singing and dancing in the liveliest Kelly Come All style.
Uh-huh. I object, but I agree also.
And it is in these elegant phases that the spirit is lightest and most gay.
I've had a particular super connection with the film because it connects to my birthday. So yeah. The song Good Morning that Debbie Reynolds actually gets to sing in, she like that song actually takes place on March 24th, which is the day after my birthday. So
good morning. Good morning, Chris. It's your birthday.
It's a fun musical that could probably have more black people, definitely. Like, that's another thing that I've noticed specifically. Like, all the films that it is based on has more black people in it than that film does.
Yeah.
In all the films that would have happened in the real world,
at the time of the film's fictitious exhibition and sort of production, these films that were that actually had diversity, if you could call it that, like, I'm really sad that that Singing in the Rain being produced in 1950s, you know, like, doesn't try to be more diverse. I did want to point out that Neil Diamond has a untitled musical, hopefully not The Jazz Singer on Broadway, but it is coming out to Broadway. The score is said to feature many Diamond classics, including Sweet Caroline, I Am, I Said, Forever in Blue Jeans, Song Sung Blue, America, and more. According to the report, the story of the show will chronicle Diamond's success in the music industry, as well as issues in his personal life. Probably about the Jazz Singer. Probably the guilt of being in blackface, right? The feature book was written by Academy Award-nominated dramatist Anthony McCartan. The musical will be directed by Tony Award winner Michael Mayer. And that's all from BroadwayWorld.com.
I think I heard something about it on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's a celebrity enough of a status of a performer that you would get a musical like that.
Oh, no, no. It's gonna, it'll more than likely be a hit despite how we feel about him. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's the Cher show.
I mean, that's like a totally different animal, Kevin. That's a totally wonderfully... It'll probably be fun. I mean, Cher is so much fun.
I'm not saying anything bad about the Cher show. I'm just saying there's the Cher show. And there's the Carole King one.
Oh, okay.
And there, yeah, so there. This is not unusual. This is just the latest of Tina Turner.
Speaking of rain, we would be remiss if we didn't mention all the crazy weather we've been having lately because of our climate change scenario. So early in July of 2021 in Japan, several days of torrential rain caused a mudslide that swept across a seaside city around 60 miles southwest of Tokyo, sweeping away 130 homes and killing at least 12, with 16 still missing. And in Europe, at least 183 lives were lost in Germany and Belgium. Hundreds of people are still missing, and the grim expectation is that many of them have not survived. And you can see more of these devastating images in the New York Times in an article written by Ian Austin. Really, it's insane.
Buckle up, folks. The weather is getting crazy. Ice storms, firenadoes, thunder snow.
Honestly, they sound like powers on a Saturday morning cartoon or a two-person fighter game. Our new normal is scary, and we need to shift direction to maintain and preserve our home. We need to vote with our dollars and our time, not just our ballot. And that is how we will shape our planet into something more sustainable for our great-grandchildren. Woot! We made it to the end of the first season. Thank you all for being a part of it. We're, I think, mostly done with the...
Hold off on that.
Yeah, we're pushing forward to getting people vaccinated and getting back to better health in this country.
We're on the right track. I feel like we're getting in the right track. Yes,
there's definitely forward movement. Yeah,
yeah. And initially, we wanted to complete our set of musicals inspired by the advent of sound with Gregory Hines' amazing show Jelly's Last Jam.
And talk about the creator of jazz music, Ferdinand Joseph Lamont, a.k.a. Jelly Roll Morton. And we will definitely get to that show, believe it. Because Kevin definitely needs to see that, but unfortunately, we're going to have to go to New York City Library to try and even view what seems to be the only copy that is available of Jelly's Last Jam.
So we will circle back because we have pressing things to talk about, and... we are still working off the whole global pandemic thing.
But Marty, we gotta do something about the kids!
My name is Kevin.
Of course, Marty, but the kids, we gotta go back!
So it looks like we will first have to help Annie, Wendy, Crutchy, and Oliver, and the Von Trapp family kids.
It's a Von Trapp!
Until then, our podcast resumes with Annie. Just a little patience until Annie joins your feed.
Subscribe today, folks.
and thank you for joining.
Thank you, folks.
The world is full of a number of things. I know we should all be as knowledgeable as, but are we? No, definitely no, positively no, decidedly no. Green people have reusable faces, and red people have angry faces. Blue people have sad faces, and some people have no faces at all. And in the words of the immortal cancelled creative, Ferdinand Joseph Lamont, as he begged to have more than just his influence allowed in Hollywood.
On the screen and the stage, musicals give us our story gauge. You want to be in the No Little One? Well, Chris and Kevin bring you plenty of fun. We'll go down rabbit holes, filling hearts with ideas for your soul. And fa-la-la-la-la, and then we talk musicals. And fa-la-la-la-la, and then we talk history. We hope our little podcast frees you from misery. Talking about musicals and history.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.